Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Colorado's in for some serious belt tightening next year. The state Senate signed off on $47 billion budget today. That sounds like a lot, but that's after state lawmakers made serious cuts to close to a $1 billion budget shortfall. The budget preserves funding for K-12 education rather than raiding education funding like the state has done in the past. But lawmakers made across-the-board cuts to Medicaid services, which are eating up a large portion of the budget as well. Those cuts have been some of the most controversial, including cuts to disability services and health care for non-citizen children and pregnant women. The budget also dips into the state's reserves, making cuts to dozens of grant-funded programs and canceling the next 2 years of TABOR refunds. Lawmakers from both parties said that this was one of the most brutal budget years yet, and they're already expecting another shortfall next year.
We are not in a program expansion mode. We are in a harm reduction mode. We are doing the best that we can with the constraints that we have to do the least harm to the people of Colorado.
We cannot continue to balance this budget with one-time money and paying for ongoing expenses time and time again. That truly is the definition of insanity. And we have to change our ways.
The House and Senate made both some slight amendments that will have to be resolved before Governor Polis signs off. One of those amendments would fund a teacher recruitment program paying high schoolers for some college classes, which was at risk of being cut this year. And other amendments cut off funding for Colorado's controversial wolf reintroduction program. State lawmakers have made it clear that more Medicaid changes are coming, and that the state's current levels of Medicaid spending are unsustainable. This week, state lawmakers set aside $500,000 to review spending in the state's Medicaid agency. State lawmakers say Medicaid spending is on track to continue outpacing the rest of the budget, especially after cuts at the federal level. There have been a lot of big shakeups in the department recently. In recent years, the department has seen a ballooning Medicaid budget and several controversies like improper billing for Medicaid transport that cost the state millions, and a federal audit into questionable billing practices by some autism service providers. The state's budget committee says they're setting aside funds for an advisory group to investigate Medicaid spending, and that committee will make recommendations to bring costs down and avoid future spending errors. There's a growing split inside Denver's restaurant industry on whether the city should lower the tipped minimum wage. On one side, owners say labor costs are too high and point to a report on the state of Denver's restaurants. Now, 65-plus restaurant owners say that argument is based on flawed data. Our Spencer Soitcher explains.
When lawmakers craft policy, it's supposed to be based on good data.
These numbers are not matching labor and statistics numbers.
For the first time, a new state law now gives Denver the power to lower tipped wages, which right now sit at $16.27 an hour. And the conversation about doing that is heating up. It comes after a report released in late February titled The State of Denver Restaurants. It listed a bunch of reasons for restaurants struggling to hang on in the city, including Denver's tipped minimum wage.
The cost of labor was a very significant issue and something that a lot of restaurant owners and operators are struggling to deal with.
Adeep Khan is the executive director of Denver's Economic Development and Opportunity, which worked with Visit Denver and InKind, a private restaurant financing company, to commission the report. The report was authored by the founders of the restaurant groups that own Snooze and Jack's Fish House.
And to me, it matches what I hear from the majority of restaurant owners, which is that costs are escalating across the board. It's labor costs, food costs. That's a reality.
The report prompted Denver City Council member Daryl Watson to tell the Denver Post he was drafting legislation to reduce the tip minimum wage. But a growing group of restaurant owners say the report reached predetermined outcomes.
It's authored by restaurant owners, which seems like a problem to me because they would directly benefit from any policy changes that would come after this report.
I think it's disingenuous. I think it's trying to assign blame to the working class.
Lindsay Dalton of Weather Vane Cafe and David Corboy of Alpine Eatery Food Truck aren't the only ones questioning the report. The Denver Auditor has issues with the data too, saying parts of the report rely on outdated or incomplete data and could give a distorted picture of the state of the industry. The authors, though, say there was no policy push.
100%. We had no preconceived notion of what was going to come out of that report.
So I asked Watson's office to interview him today, specifically asking for comment on whether he plans to bring some sort of legislation to council and if he still supports lowering the tipped minimum wage. His office told me it had no comment because there is no tipped wage bill being brought before the council. Of course, he's the one who told the Post he was drafting that.
And the restaurants that have signed on to this list that are opposing it, I mean, it sounds like a pretty long list at that.
It's about 65 restaurants or so, although there was an interesting discrepancy in here, and I need to go through each of them individually, but it's a lot of cafes and food trucks or pizzerias, smaller places, not necessarily your sit-down with a server type place that seem to be opposing this, like the authors of this bill, of this study said there was.
Well, we would be waiting to hear from them if it does come in front of council. Thank you so much, Spencer. Mountain towns that suffered from a hot, dry winter are cashing in on some summer attractions early, like Georgetown, where officials celebrated the opening of Guanella Pass more than a month ahead of schedule today.
Guanella Pass traditionally opens Memorial Weekend. This is not Memorial Weekend. This is the first time this has opened this early since the pass was paved in 2016.
The 24-mile scenic byway is typically open from Memorial Day through Thanksgiving and sees its peak tourism when the leaves change in the fall. Clear Creek County officials say the route was able to be cleared significantly ahead of schedule because of the low snow levels this year. But you can never count out a spring snowstorm. County officials say the pass could be temporarily closed if driving conditions become unsafe. And speaking about spring snowstorms, I mean, we're in April. We've been waiting for snow for a long time. I know you made Kyle do the pledge not to garden. I also take that pledge, but it was really hard. I just have to admit. And so now we're expecting snow, of all things.
We're not gardening until Mother's Day, right, Angeline?
Right. I pledge.
Nothing. We all pledge to do that. And here's the reason why. Sharp cold front will move through tonight. Classic Colorado, it's in the mid-70s right now, which means, of course, it'll be snowing in about 12 to 18 hours. Across the Denver area in the mountains, you get that snow first. They might have to close Guanella briefly tomorrow with a burst of snow that'll move through the mountains tomorrow morning. In Denver, our snow will arrive tomorrow morning, and it'll continue most of the day. But accumulations in town, this is a little bit of slush, maybe an inch or so of snow on colder surfaces like car tops, grass, things like that. Foothills a bit more. Freeze warning for temperatures 18 to 24 degrees for Saturday morning. This will be the main impact out of that next storm system. 7-day forecast, we warm back into the 70s and 80s most of next week. Weather impact alert for tomorrow and Saturday morning for the cold and snow.
First responders are cautiously optimistic about a fire burning along the New Mexico border. Fire crews have made progress against the Schwachheim fire near Trinidad, but critical fire weather conditions mean things could change quickly. The state's Division of Fire Prevention and Control says crews have contained the south and southwestern sides of the fire, a big improvement over yesterday when the fire was burning uncontained. It burned a little more than 1,000 acres, but crews are working in the middle of dry, windy conditions. A cold front moving in tonight will cool things off, as Chris mentioned, but could also bring more wind and thunderstorms. Governor Jared Polis declared a disaster emergency in the area earlier this week, freeing up state resources to help fight the fire. A community in eastern Colorado is mourning the loss of one of their own nearly 2 months after a car crashed through their courthouse.
She was just doing her job, and who would have ever thought that that was going to be her last time being at work?
Her husband tells us about the legacy she leaves behind next. Pictures of a car that crashed into the Lincoln County Courthouse were shared everywhere in February. But there's more to the story. Mark Salinger shares what happened over the next 37 days.
The paper says car crashes into Lincoln County Courthouse.
The crash on February 24th made headlines.
There's still a hole as far as I know.
Anthony Quintana spent the weeks that followed in private.
Yeah, very hard. Yep.
His wife, Kimberly, worked here in Human Services. Her desk at the Lincoln County Courthouse in Hugo was on the other side of this wall.
When I got to the local hospital here, you know, I got to talk to her. She was awake. I asked her if she knew what happened. She said it was an explosion. And I told her, no, you got hit by a car. And she said, I did? And I said, yeah, you did.
Anthony and Kimberly men in high school.
This is one of the pictures that we took a few years ago.
They'd been married for almost a decade.
She wanted to be with me as I wanted to be with her. But it's like, how did this happen?
For 37 days after the crash, Kimberly fought through surgeries and procedures until she couldn't anymore. She passed away on April 2nd.
Life is short. We're not promised tomorrow. The journey that I'm on, I'll have to just pick up my cross and keep going.
Anthony says police are still investigating how and why the driver sped through the brick wall and into Kimberly's office.
She was just doing her job. And who would have ever thought that that was going to be her last time being at work?
Because beyond this story,
I definitely miss my wife.
There's a lifetime of loss.
She was my soulmate.
This isn't the first time that someone has crashed their car into that same courthouse there in Hugo. Anthony said there used to be barriers around the courthouse, but those were taken down during construction. No word from the sheriff's office on if the driver will face any charges, Angeline.
And I'm sure that's something the family is waiting on to learn more about this driver and really what happens next.
Yeah, we know it was a 75-year-old man who Colorado State Patrol says lost control of his car as he was driving in that area. Though if you are in that area around Hugo, you know that there's not really a road that's right next to it. So if he was going at a higher rate of speed, still a lot of work left to determine exactly what happened.
Right. Well, our heart goes out to the family and everyone who knew her. Thanks so much, Mark. Smoke is spewing from a flare at the Suncor refinery in Commerce City. The company reported the problem to the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment earlier this week. Suncor told CDPHE it was emitting higher levels of carbon monoxide, hydrogen sulfide, and sulfur dioxide. CDPHE says strong winds carried the chemicals higher, reducing the amount of smoke people on the ground were actually breathing. Suncor says the smoke could be visible for several days. CDPHE sent an inspector to the refinery on Tuesday and says they'll keep monitoring the situation and air quality in the area. And speaking about weather, okay, I'm waiting. Tell us a little bit more about this spring snowstorm.
Yeah, 77 for a high today, Angeline. And of course, naturally, it'll be snowing in about 12 hours in Denver. Cold front will move through later tonight, about 5-6 hours away. That front moves through the metro area. Mountains will get a burst of snow. In the metro area, our snow begins between about 7 and 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. But with the high sun angle and temperatures that will be above freezing and the warm ground, this snow is going to just stick on colder surfaces, cars, grassy surfaces, things like that. But roads will stay wet in the metro and really below 7,000 feet. Low impact snow, but it will snow most of tomorrow with a trace to an inch or two of slushy snow. Again, on those colder surfaces, likely with a bit more in the foothills above 7,000 feet in elevation. Freeze warning for the northeastern plains, temperatures dropping down to 18 to 24 degrees by the time you wake up on Saturday morning. That's going to be the big impact from this. It's going to be those really cold temperatures and that early spring killing freeze and a hard freeze at that. Hard freeze means 28 or below. We're going to be well below that. But then it's Colorado, which means we'll be right back in the 70s and even the 80s by the middle of next week.
Tonight on Nest, an update to the southern visitor we told you about last night. Birdwatchers are flocking to a retention pond in Arvada to catch a glimpse of this white ibis. They're a wetland bird typically found in the southern half of the East Coast. Fun fact, they eat the critters in the shallow water out there. So why is it here? A bird expert says birds from that area are becoming a more common sight here in Colorado. You may remember the anhinga spotted in Boulder County last year. The chairman of the Colorado Bird Records Committee says they believe it's due to the warmer weather.
It's been so warm that species are coming back earlier than normal this spring. And so this isn't a full adult, so it doesn't even have the excuse of being an immature bird that doesn't know what it's doing. So this is a full adult.
We're getting a cold snap this weekend, which could be tricky for the white ibis, but Jen says the bird may stay here for a couple of months. He says there may have been 14 recorded sightings of the white ibis since 1985.
This project's unique because it is pretty much a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
And these students are competing for the chance to cook for some very particular clients, astronauts on the International Space Station. The next space mission is already taking shape, not in a lab, but on a plate. And it's launching right here from Jefferson County.
put aprons on. It's not like your typical high school where you come in, you get to go to English class, and then you spend an hour in the kitchen, and then you go to math. It's a technical school where, you know, students come to learn food safety and different skills sets with cooking, chopping, sauteing, baking, a lot of different things. Yeah, so this is the taco knots. Ariana, Abby,
JC. This is our dehydrated taco, so all together it's perfectly measured. These meals are going to space. So we competed against about 30 other schools in the country, including Puerto Rico. We became top 10 in the country. And so the other 9 states that are going to Texas, they're going to be bringing their taco, and then we will have 27 judges to decide what's best. It will be a new thing for astronauts to have when they're up there. Supporting Colorado beef, so. But astronauts, they have to deal with microgravity. Because of microgravity, they lose their sense of taste and smell. When we had watched videos of past astronauts saying what they like in their food, they had mentioned really spicy food. Yeah, so what might be spicy, like really spicy to us, won't be spicy to them up there.
I'm very proud of them. I mean, this is a really big deal.
We were surprised. It's a very big thing. We get a lot out of it. There might be potential scholarships.
Resumes.
Yeah, it would look really good on the resumes for a long time.
It's crazy to think that the food started here and it can be sent up into space. It's crazy to think that that's a possibility. Like the food you made, astronauts are eating, which is awesome.
Pretty cool, the more you know. The Rockies' home opener against the Phillies was some criminally bad baseball, but some fans risked criminal charges to get a bird's eye view of the Phillies handing the Rockies a 10-1 loss. The Rockies say more than half a dozen drones violated federal regulations by flying at or near Coors Field on April 3rd. The airspace within 3 miles of the field is restricted for each MLB event. Same goes for Mile High when the Broncos are playing. Violating those restrictions is illegal and can result in severe penalties. The FBI and the FAA say they use counter-drone tools to scope out unauthorized drones during those events. Operators who violate the rules face drone confiscation, the loss of their license, and fines up to $75,000. They could also face up to a year in prison. And we're back with your feedback next. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, with your feedback, Ross and Loveland, let's reframe the $1 billion shortfall. It's only 2% of $48 billion. With rising gas prices, shrinkflation at the grocery store, most Coloradans are facing 10, 20, or 30% shortfalls at home. True, but when you think about it, some programs are being cut 100%, some are being cut at different rates, and so the Coloradans that, you know, really use these programs are going to definitely face a different percentage, right? And so you have to think about it in that way, too. Thanks so much for joining us. Kyle's back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News, streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.